From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Support for Almost Entirely Sports is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. And Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. Here's what we can do for you. We have an exclusive offer for listeners to Almost Entirely Sports. It's 20% off plus free shipping with the code ALMOST. Most on any order at manscaped.com. It's an incredible deal for an incredible product. Listen, over the course of our future, maybe we'll get into more or less detail whenever talking about our experience with Manscaped, but I can tell you firsthand, they hooked us up. They sent out a box for me and Beards and Rudy, and apparently Beards this whole time was a Manscaped user and never told us, which has just really brought on more questions than answers at this point. But I have now used the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0, and everything in their Perfect Package 3.0 is absolutely unbelievable. Everything the ads say have been 100% true. It truly is a best-in-class grooming experience. You can support the show and get a great product from Manscaped, really supporting yourself, if you know what I mean. There's a lot of double entendres throughout this read. I don't know if you caught that or not. You can get 20% off and free shipping with the code ALMOST at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code ALMOST. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Offensively, it's legitimately the best possible start, better than imaginable, the best possible start from like a literal perspective for Patrick Mahomes. What have you taken to be the most impressive thing that Mahomes has done through two games?
Man, isn't it that moxie? I look at him at the line of scrimmage, and I just want to marry him.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Ever the proponent of all the moxie you can get, Matt Connor of Arrowhead Attic joins us now. You can follow him on Twitter at MattConnorAA. You can read his work and all sorts of other great Chiefs coverage at ArrowheadAttic.com, a part of the fan-sided network over there. Again, ArrowheadAttic.com. You also follow Arrowhead Attic on Twitter at Arrowhead Attic. Matt, are you feeling moxie full at this point? That's a word, I bet.
Moxie. I got more moxie as the weekend approaches. What about you?
I am ready for the draft to be here. I think I peaked in terms of moxie about four to 8 days ago, and I have been absolutely hemorrhaging moxie, and I just want the draft to start.
I love it. Everyone complains. They're like, oh my gosh, get the draft here already. Mm-hmm. Like it's holidays or something. And the reality is, I think everyone forgets. It's like, yo, it's a desert around here in May and June. Like every sports writer goes on vacation 4 weeks from now.
Yep.
I would actually take two more weeks of Mac Jones is genius,
right,
and you know whatever's going on. But hey, let's do it and get it over with, I guess, is what most people are thinking.
It's just I've used this analogy before, and I know this is also going to be pretty true for you. So I want to acknowledge your point. There is a very good one. Things are going to start being really difficult around here whenever we have done all the analysis we possibly can on the draft picks, and then all that's left is the Royals game. I mean, that's going to be tough. But I feel like I cannonballed into the draft this year, like pretty much right after the Super Bowl, and at least after free agency, which is like very aggressively right after free agency. And so now I've been in the pool long enough that I am just a floating corpse. My fingers are pruny. I am waterlogged. And I just think I need to get out of the pool for a little bit, honestly. Maybe come Monday I'll be fully rejuvenated again, just kick my feet up for a weekend.
I could totally understand that, but I have memories of writing more about Bo Peep Keys in the middle of June than anyone really needs to. So, yeah, I'll do it again. Let's write more about the second year of Bo Peep Keys this time around.
Here's my saddest Chiefs memory, okay? This was probably whenever I was doing Roughing the Kicker, and it was going up on Arrowhead Addict back in the early days of me jumping into to podcasting. Boy, is this going to be true? The name I've got in mind is just longer ago than I thought it was. I remember doing, I think it was two episodes around the 2014 draft, after the 2014 draft. And I remember doing basically an entire episode about why I like Zach Fulton.
Oh,
at the
yeah.
time, a sixth-round pick. I was right,
you
by
were right.
the way. I crushed this one. I was nailing it out here. I love Zach Fulton. But it was not a good topic for an entire podcast. I also did a podcast at one point about the priority undrafted free agents the Chiefs had given large signing bonuses too.
I'm pretty sure I've done like a 7-part series on Leon McQuaid.
Yes.
I'm with you.
So I mean, yeah, I guess we should probably appreciate this as it happens, and the fact that we can write about and talk about 1,000 players as opposed to the same 6 or 7 that'll be here come a week from now. But in the meantime, we'll get to some of the specifics within the draft. But one thing that's sort of a big picture thing that I've found interesting, and we talked about it just basically the last hour, is the value of either trading up or trading back down, the philosophy at hand there, and how that ultimately impacts the choices that you make, and how you specifically would value that. I know that it's difficult to do that without there being names on the board, but as you have to decide this from a philosophical perspective, how do you feel about the merits or demerits of moving around in the draft?
You know, I can understand it both ways. I can understand that the whole thing is a risk, and so therefore, you know, like, let's take as many risks as we can and see what works out.
Yeah.
But I mean, honestly, at the same time, I also understand, look, if you trust your scouts, if you trust your own instincts, it's why you have the job in the first place, and you think this guy is the guy, then I think you go get the guy. And I think not to trust that means that you shouldn't be in that position in the first place. So, you know, I also don't think that the Chiefs need 8 rookies plus undrafted guys to come in this year. You know, like, if you said they're going to take 8 picks and turn those into 5 guys that their whole draft room loves, I'm okay with that. I'd much, you know, like, given where this roster is at, I think going quality over quantity, you know, and let's not forget, in the middle of all this uncertainty and the global pandemic and what that's created, the cloud of mystery over it all, the Chiefs have maybe the most continuity from coaches and coordinators to front office. I mean, they didn't lose anyone but McCullough to University of Indiana down the chain. So I just think even there, that's going to help them in their evaluation to know what they need, what players they need to bring in to put on the field. So I guess I'm more in team draft up, although all of this, as you said, is contingent on, you know, the right guy being there.
Yeah, and I want to talk about some other stuff, but the one element of that that I keep picking at to try to figure out if it is as, I don't know, solid as it looks, I think that the point of, hey, well, if you trust your scouts, then you should get that guy, and you should trust your scouts for an NFL GM. But I also keep looking at, like, the fact that general managers that we think are excellent end up missing a high percentage of the time, or, you know, even the moves up that Veach has made, where it's been for Breland Speaks, which did not work, or Derek Nnadi, which kind of worked, or Mecole Hardman, which kind of worked. Like, you can grade on whatever sliding scale that you want. There was a snippet from the Ravens GM that I was reading earlier, we mentioned earlier, where he was saying one of the reasons he thinks that they've been good at drafting is because they have more shots. Like, I would rather give those scouts, even, you know, saying I trust those scouts, I would rather give them more chances to be proven right. And then you find hopefully you try to find your Legarius Sneeds and your Mike Danas and your Rashad Fentons later on, which the Chiefs have had pretty good success finding guys in that range, at least the last couple of years. So,
yeah, I don't disagree with you there. But here's what I think. I think we forget the context around, like, the immediate context around when these guys were taken in the first place. So, like, last year at this time, we were all holding hands and singing, you know, whatever fight song and waiting, like, hey, 7 days, it's the draft. And then right before the draft, suddenly we were like, oh my gosh, Tyreek Hill is never playing professional football again.
Right.
And like, here comes all this drama.
Mm-hmm.
And so, a couple years ago.
2 years ago, yeah.
And so when we're talking about, let's say, Mecole Hardman, for example, in retrospect, I think what we're forgetting is, hey, at one point we thought Tyreek was going to be out of the picture completely and Hardman was going to be the lone major speedster. And like, Andy Reid's offense just doesn't work without that guy to take the top off. And so now we're talking about Hardman in light of, well, what can he do next to Tyreek? When he was taken, like, at this last second, you know, like, the front office was probably in emergency mode going, you know, if we don't get Tyreek or someone like Tyreek, like, right now, we're already past free agency. We're on the doorstep of the draft. I'm going to trade up and get this guy because we don't know if Tyreek's ever playing again. Like, I think we can forget that in, you know, that cloud at the moment 2 years later when we're going, why isn't Hardman the guy that he was traded up to be? Yeah, I don't know. So I think some of that comes into play when we're evaluating these guys after the fact and forgetting sort of that immediate context, at least in some specific instances.
Yeah, we've gotten hung up on Mecole Hardman the last like 45 minutes, so I'll let you have that one. No, it's okay. No, that's not your fault. The last 2 minutes are your fault. The previous 43 are on me. So I'll just give you that. And I want to talk about this draft some as well. You know, if I get bored in 15 minutes after we're 20 minutes we're done talking to you, then we'll see if we end up hung up on the Mecole Hardman conversation one more time. That might just be the thing that gets us through the show today. But I want to talk about this draft class because there's some really interesting things where the Chiefs could end up at 30. We have absolutely here put all of our possible breaths into this this tackle draft class and what exactly the Chiefs need and how much of a sure thing it is that they take one at 31, they take one at 63. Obviously, being dealing with the fact that there are going to be 30 players taken before the Chiefs are on the clock, unless they move up. How do you feel about this tackle class specifically through the Chiefs' lens right now?
Yeah, I think it's fine. I think there's a lot of great options. I don't know that I have anything to say that other people haven't already said ad nauseum, where it's a deep class. I think they can get a future guy at one, maybe at two, and maybe a guy falls into the third round. I think if a guy falls, I think Veach is going to make his move to get him. But I think they can wait. I know every fan is like, pick OT, pick OT, pick OT. But if you don't take a pass rusher first and foremost, and really even two of them, honestly. But yeah, I mean, to me, that's I wouldn't be surprised if that's the primary move and even a tertiary move down the draft as well. So I'm not panicking about tackle. To me, it's like, go get a Jalen Phillips and make something like that happen. But, you know, hey, I wouldn't kick Sam Cosmi out of bed, would you?
Right. Well, it's hard to say. I feel like I like my space, and he's an enormous man.
They make California king for such moments, right?
I'll tell you what, he might kick me out of bed, and I wouldn't have any say in it. I definitely wouldn't move. I could not physically move him. So I guess the answer to your question is no. I wouldn't try. I would curl up into the fetal position and take my little corner that's remaining.
You could sleep on the ottoman like a Michael Scott, like this.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. I think you're right about the edge, by the way. I thought that as free agency was starting, I would have bet pretty much anything that the Chiefs would have added a veteran tackle to keep all of that from being quite so contentious and then draft an edge rusher at 31. But it's kind of funny. The edge and the tackle spot this year are both pretty strange. Do you have a guy that you would feel especially excited about at 31, because there's not a Myles Garrett, Chase Young this year, which doesn't matter. The Chiefs wouldn't have been there for him anyway. But down the roster a little bit, it seems like there's really a lot of prospects with a lot of talent, but not necessarily a lot of production, which I don't feel like is going to scare Steve Spagnuolo off, honestly. But what do you make of the class, especially once the Chiefs are picking?
Yeah, I mentioned Jalen Phillips earlier. Mm-hmm. I think you may have to move up to get a guy like that. But, man, so many of these guys are a roll of the dice. I mean, that's true of several positions. That's really true of the whole draft, I guess. But the opt-outs, the shortened season, injury risks with some of these guys, character concerns with other guys. There's not a lot of clean, sure things. Even if you don't like the ceiling for some guys, even the floor is questionable.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference here. I think in the past you could go, like even in free agency, a guy like Alex Okafor, where you're like, okay, that guy's like the ceiling's not really there,
mm-hmm.
but at least he has the floor where, you know, he's like, you know, he can come in, he's going to be league average, he's going to set the edge, he's going to whatever. And so some of these rookies, you're like, I don't even know what the floor is, let alone the ceiling. So I think that makes things kind of scarier than ever, which makes for drama, which makes for a great viewer experience.
That's
like,
true.
For me, this is going to be an exciting draft.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. It's also interesting because the Chiefs at this point don't have a large number of needs, but it does seem like their two, maybe three main ones are relatively significant. So I don't know, how are you hoping that they end up managing that? Because noting that maybe they can wait a little longer at tackle, noting that you think they should probably go with a pass rusher early and then probably again at some point, knowing that they lost Sammy Watkins in free agency and they tried very hard to add a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster, so I don't think they're done at receiver. Austin Blythe is clearly not a long-term plan at center. He's here for a year. I guess in the more, again, sort of general how you hope this pans out situation, what are you looking for?
I think we're going to be looking at a little bit different Chiefs team right before the draft. Remember that compensatory picks no longer apply April 27th.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a couple days before the draft. I think it wouldn't surprise me if the Chiefs had some patient deal worked out where maybe Melvin Ingram is brought in on the 27th. And
yeah.
Suddenly we're like, oh, pass rusher's a little bit deeper now than we thought it was. Maybe Bashaud Breeland is kind of sitting there waiting on whether or not the Chiefs pull the trigger on an early cornerback, and maybe he is signed during or immediately after the draft. I mean, so to me, some of those guys that I'd actually like to see on the roster could still be there to help round out some of these areas that could be concerning. For me, I have maybe some issues at tackle, but nothing like anyone else. I don't understand why people aren't. I just think Eric Fisher is very much in play,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know why that door would be closed. The early indications were he was going to be back by August. Andy Reid just said the door wasn't closed. I mean, we did the big farewell on Instagram. We put a bow on it. I guess in that way it looked final. And maybe it was, but he was playing so well. He came back from missing eight games to play a Pro Bowl year. I just have a hard time believing that Achilles just takes everything from him when linemen are now playing so well into their mid-30s. So, I don't know. I'm not panicking about tackle the way that much of Chiefs Kingdom is.
The thing about Fisher that I think is interesting is I think you're right to say there's no reason to assume that door is closed. I just wonder how long it's going to take before that door gets opened and then what the plan is in the interim. And because you're right, I mean, if they were going into this year with fully healthy on the roster Eric Fisher and Lucas Niang and Mike Remmers, I'd be feeling, I mean, I think they could still afford to add some depth there because we don't want to see Mike Remmers have any reason to end up at left tackle ever again. But, like, I feel pretty good about that trio of, like, if those are your 1, 2, 3, whatever order that ends up being, I feel pretty good about that. But because, and I also agree that I think there's a good argument to be made that Eric Fisher halfway through next season looks something like Eric Fisher again and that there's real value to that. I just worry about what happens in the meantime. And look, I don't actually think that it's going to be Yasir Durant or Martinez Rankin at left tackle, and maybe it's Lucas Niang on the left side and Mike Remmers on the right side. But whatever they have to do to patch it up until Fisher comes back, if that is the plan, I don't know, man. They got to protect Patrick Mahomes in the meantime. That makes me nervous.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that the initial timeline given by Brett Veach, it was actually what Rick Burkholder to Brett Veach to announce back in February,
mm-hmm.
that he said both those guys were going to be back by camp, that Schwartz and Fisher's timelines were August. Like, do you think that was just basically a smokescreen or like just like wishful thinking?
I think Brett Veach seems surprised to be saying that out loud. So I'm not sure what that means, but like whenever he said that and got asked about it again, he went back to the paper like he was reading it for the first time. So I think it is hopeful, maybe an accelerated timeline. And the other thing with that is I think if they actually believe that, I don't know if cutting him makes sense. Because if you really think he's going to be back by then, you don't have to protect yourself in the way that they have this offseason by saying, we're just going to cut you out, right? We're going to go through all of these things, and then we're going to come out on the other end and then try to bring you back in week four, week six, or week eight. If they really do believe that, I feel like he'd still be a member of the Chiefs. I think he'd be on the roster right now.
Yeah, that would be a tough sell to say, all right, look, we're going to release you. We're going to put your money with other money. We're going to chase Trent Williams very, very publicly.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't work out, I'll call you when you're healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that is a little, you know, that's that's not really the way you want to treat someone, and kind of creates an odd culture. At the same time, I mean, we're going to be pissed if someone else signs Eric Fisher for 1 year, $5 million.
Yep.
And he ends up starting 12 games. And looks the part again. We're going to go, what in the world just happened?
Yep. I think you're 100% right about that. Also, you breaking all that down, if you think about that as a relationship, that would be toxic, and you would tell your friend to stop talking to the person who is treating them that way. But that nobody ever goes. No one ever says, listen, guys, just a reminder, the NFL is a relationship. No, it's a business. It is a business, and this is what it looks like sometimes. I want to ask you about a ranking that you put up on Arrowhead Attic today. This is hopefully a little palate cleanser in some ways, and some of these will be unpleasant memories. But you ranked the Chiefs' first-round picks since the year 2000. I've gone through the entire list. I will bring my own contenders to the table here. But what have people gotten the most angry at you about of these rankings?
Well, you know, Mahomes was number one, but even number two, Eric Berry, just, you know, like, some people were just, I think, wanting to torch my house over that, which blows my mind, because when you, like, to me, when he was on the field, even with other greats around him, like other future Ring of Honor guys around him, like, I feel like if I was talking to DJ right now, he would be like, oh yeah, Eric Berry was the, you know, so like he was just so, he was that defining talent in the secondary, a leader of men. And then when you add that he was returning not just a Pro Bowl form, like a popularity contest, but first team All Pro after going down with the ACL and then the Hodgkin lymphoma diagnosis, I'm just thinking, like, this guy is the feel-good Alex Smith comeback story, that side. And he's also, like, every bit to run Matthew on the field and then some as well. I mean, so I'm just baffled that everyone is kind of forgetting just how, you know, I think what everyone remembers is he made a lot of money and then played nothing after that.
Yeah.
And it's the same sort of Justin Houston disdain or other such signings. But, yeah, it started there, and you know, people had issues with I put Marcus Peters at number 5 because I'm always going to be bullish on him.
I think that's a good ranking. I love that. I was so happy to see him at 5. I think I think that's the right spot also.
Right. He's a singular talent. I still believe, you know, I don't know how you don't work that out. He was a cost-controlled cornerback at the time, too. I mean, I don't get that. But yeah, so those were two of the big sticking points.
The Eric Berry one is fascinating to me because you're right. Like, he has had the inverse post Chiefs sort of aging of Alex Smith, because Alex Smith left and Patrick Mahomes was incredible and the Chiefs won a Super Bowl, and Chiefs fans were never more appreciative of Alex Smith than they were after he was gone. Eric Berry had the singular biggest swing in terms of fan perception that I've maybe ever seen for any player ever. And, like, and Dee Ford went from being a pretty good pass rusher who was relatively limited and dealing with injuries a lot to being, like, a literal, like, he could have literally been run out of town like Shrek, like with pitchforks and torches. But Eric Berry and the way that his career here ended has it seemingly erased an incredible career from the memories of so many people. It's really weird.
It's crazy. He, you know, he takes the money, which anyone would have done.
Yeah.
And then he can't play because of heel and ankle injuries. and like people are questioning his willingness to play, and it's like, he came back after cancer. What are you smoking? Like, what are you talking about? The guy's made of the toughest stuff ever, and he still couldn't make it work. So I'm sorry that your viewing experience, like, I'm sorry that money that's not yours was spent to try to entertain you and it didn't quite work out.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's just baffling to me. Here's what's crazy, though. I think Eric Berry has not done himself any favors.
Yeah.
Because, like, for example, Alex Smith has made himself available to the press and on social media to share the stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I can go and look at the crazy bionic leg that was just put together by fish scales and whatever else they use
mm-hmm.
to put that thing together. And then I can, like, you know, I can be like, oh, wow, what a guy, what a leader. But Eric Berry has been, like, he's like living with Werner Herzog or some. Like I don't know where he is, but he is like, he's totally missing. He's not like making his own case. He's not like in the community, doing these like Chiefs events. He's not like banging the drum or announcing. You know, like race on. I don't know what you say at the Speedway. Race on.
Yeah, it's race on. That's it. That's what it is.
Let's get ready to race.
Race on, guys. Race on. So yeah, you know what I'm saying. I mean. He's just not a public figure anymore where we can go, oh, yeah, I love that guy. And, oh, yeah, that was his story. So, the last impression we're left with is that injury and all the money that was paid for him not to play.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I think you have Dwayne Bowe 7 spots too low because he's number 8, and I feel like I'm not sure Patrick Mahomes has earned that yet, and I'm just realizing I might not be reasonable about Dwayne Bowe. That's fine.
I think the Clyde Edwards-Helaire disrespect is a little –
Well, so
I think it's disrespectful.
I did want to bring this up. You said it's incomplete on Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
He's certainly number 2.
You said it's incomplete on Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
And behind Dwayne Bowe.
I understand why you're doing that. But also, I really do wish you would have just put him on the list at like, oh my god! If you would have put him on, if you would have put him at 12 behind D Ford, you would have had to have moved, and I would have agreed with you, and it would have been hilarious to me.
You know, I can actually be a little bit of a D Ford homer too.
Yeah,
because the contract year, like the great Therese, you know, said, is always undefeated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, man, in 2018, I mean, Dee Ford was one of the best 2-4 defenders in the entire sport.
He's great.
And mm-hmm. and he maybe has still, I mean, I don't know about injuries, but he has maybe the best burst off the line in football. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so he's not like without talent. It's not like John Dorsey, like, flushed a pick down the toilet when he picked him or something. It, you know, it's just like back injuries. What do you do? Dontari Poe, back injuries. What do you do?
And he doesn't know where to stand on the football field.
Just those two things for D4.
There's that. Yeah. Hey, look, the number of times that someone has had to look at me and say, hey, you're not where you're supposed to be right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like off the charts. So, you know, I'm a social D Ford, so I guess I can kind of, yeah.
I'm a social D Ford. No, it's perfect. No, I'm a social D Ford is an mm-hmm. absolutely brilliant tagline.
My groin's frequently hurt. I'm where I'm not supposed to be. It's, yeah, it checks out.
I'm always out of position, and I can't stop pulling my groin. I'm a social D Ford. Great.
I'm still waiting for my contract year.
Yeah, that's also true.
That's why I'm never winning.
Holy smokes. So I think that's all. Do we want to talk about any of the failures, or do we want to just take the feel good for now and not talk about Jonathan Baldwin?
Oh, I'm so wrong.
Oh man. Do you remember the late night workout videos that he would post? Like John Baldwin would say, like, I'm running right now and it's 2 a.m. and we would all like feel good, like yeah, dude, hell yeah, you keep running. That's our man.
That training camp before the second year, where it was just every article was just about Jonathan Baldwin's performance in training camp and how he's catching everything, and he was spending all this time working on one-handed catches, and I was convinced. And the thing was, he was my guy going into that draft. He was my guy because I remember watching him at Pitt make all these crazy catches.
You don't have to admit
with the worst quarterbacks. Like, I think Tyler Palko, I think, might have been one of them, throwing the football to him. Like, you get this guy a decent quarterback in the NFL, and he's going to be great. And God, I was That might be like my biggest, like, I was so certain that he was going to be so good, and it still haunts me.
Man, you weren't the only one. People whose jobs depended on it agreed with you.
Yeah.
I would have been 14 or 15, I think, at a Chiefs draft party when they had the third overall pick, and they took Tyson Jackson. And I was mad out loud at a Chiefs draft party. Like it was at like their practice facilities or something. And I think I said out loud, like, what? Why? And just as a child with my dad, just waiting for Mitch Holthus to come out and tell us how great this dude was going
to
be.
Tell you why.
And that, yeah, it didn't make sense to me then, and it has not made more sense to me at any point in the last 10 years.
I still remember, I think, though, too, that my favorite thing about Jonathan Baldwin is that his best catch ever as a Chief, like, didn't even officially happen. I think it was against the Broncos, and there was an offensive holding. Like, he made, like, he reached in behind somebody's back to catch a ball, and we were all got excited.
Yeah.
And then you see the flag signal, and you're just like,
I do remember that.
Best catch he ever made.
That didn't count.
Didn't count.
Yeah.
You said what? Why about Tyson Jackson? I think you'd say that even after his like what 8 or 9 or 10 years in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, why? Why? What? It was just a big shrug, I think.
How long? Because I know he was with the Falcons for a while. I wonder.
Him and Glenn Dorsey both had like identical careers. I feel like
Tyson, that was it. Yeah, they're picked at 3 and 5, played for the same line
in the NFL then, for weirdly long.
Yeah, it's like. It's like if you can play just league average replacement level football, you're good to go. Maybe those guys are the Chase Daniel of the defensive line.
Yeah, he signed he played 3 years in Atlanta, Tyson Jackson did, and then he called it quits after 2016. So he got 8 years in the league.
Dorsey had 9.
122 games played.
Yeah, those guys had eerily similar stats, like just 7 sacks, 9 sacks. And I mean, just. Yeah, it's just not much to move the needle from either guy.
That was back when I used to believe that like a 3-4 defensive end couldn't get sacks. And then J.J. Watt was like, yeah, I'm going to have 20 a year.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, so they can get sacks. I was told they couldn't.
I remember 1 year Tomba led the Chiefs with 3 sacks. And, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. No. You know, like that, it was. We complain about Frank Clark now, but, I mean – yeah.
The receivers didn't have a touchdown catch not that long ago.
Yeah.
Like, there is some
that was
weird...
with Andy Reid. That happened with Andy Reid.
I always forget that happened
with
Andy Reid.
I know. It's incredible. It's unbelievable.
Oh, man.
It really is.
What, Beards? You just pulled your microphone up like you're going to say something.
Wasn't Dwayne Bowe on that team?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't the receiver coach, was that Sirianni? Wasn't he on the Chiefs? Like
No, it was David Culley.
It was David Culley. Yeah, I knew it was one of the guys who just got the job. Wow.
Yeah.
Go Texans.
Well, at least they got everything else working for them. All right. Matt, I'll give you just one here's just a water balloon you can just throw back at this. This segment really got away from us talking about Dwayne Bowe and Glenn Dorsey and Tyson Jackson. But is there anything else that's really gotten your gears going on draft talk before we let you go? I saw that you murdered the CBS Sports mock draft. You just absolutely just gutted it and wore that mock as a jacket. But it can be about that or anything else. Really spicing up your draft feelings at this point.
If we take a tight end earlier than like the 8th round in the draft, I'm going to quit my job. I'm just so tired of, you know, a guy's going to get 10 touches, whatever. All this, like, we need a second round tight end right now or third round when there are so many other needs. Yeah, I'm just not here for it. I'm not here for it. And by the way, like Kyle Pitts and all these like first round tight end talk, like, We've heard all these guys hyped up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like T.J. Hockenson, Noah Font, some of these others. And they come in and they're like putting up, I don't know. I read a Kyle Pitts scouting report and they were like, he's the next Darren Waller. And I'm like, when was Darren Waller drafted and when did he like move the needle for a franchise?
Yeah.
So, yeah, get the tight end trash out of here.
Well, we have marked that because this is a show that whenever you say things like if they take a tight end before the eighth round, or perhaps if they draft a running back, I will quit my job / be electrocuted by a device made for electrocution. Sometimes words mean things, Matt. I may not force you to quit your job if they do in fact draft the tight end, but we will have that on the record. If in fact that happens. And you know, Matt, one thing you mentioned here, they have too many other needs. I agree with you. If they wanted to still take a tight end but address all those needs, they could trade back and get more picks. Full circle, everybody. It's all about me imposing my agenda on Matt. That's the whole show, is me trying to make all the guests agree with me and my perspectives on everything.
Well done, my friend.
Yeah, and that all planned out like Memento. I've got this legal pad here, and it's got the whole, I storyboarded the whole thing, including getting distracted by Tyson Jackson for a little while. Thank you, Matt. We'll talk to you again soon, sometime after the draft, whenever we've all quit our jobs because of who the Chiefs have drafted.
Sounds good, man. Take care, guys.
Matt Connor of Arrowhead Addict. Follow him on Twitter at MattConnorAA. Check out his work and all sorts of great work on arrowheadaddict.com. You can also follow Arrowhead Addict on Twitter at Arrowhead Addict. But again, go give Matt a follow at MattConnorAA. We'll take a break whenever we come back. A few things that came up there that we might talk about. Maybe we'll just get distracted by other Chiefs draft picks from the 2000s that, for what one reason or another, really get us revved up, I guess.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
And Sammy Watkins practiced today. Dee Ford practiced today. Eric Berry practiced today. Just kidding, he didn't. He's never going to practice.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I will not rest until I find the absolute tool bags who turned Kansas City against Eric Berry. Absolutely unbelievable. I can't believe anyone would have done that even by accident. Absolutely inexcusable. We're going to find whoever's responsible for this.
It's a day-to-day process. We'll get to it eventually.
Right now, it's just not in my spirit. I feel like I should be wearing a hot dog costume right now. That is... Wow. That's a tough one for me, Beards.
I mean, I'm a little surprised that we weren't more understanding. I mean, we've all dealt with a Haglund deformity.
Haglunds, plural.
That's what I said.
Mm-hmm. What are you laughing at, Beards?
Nothing.
Okay. What are you laughing at, Rudy? This is really confusing.
Somebody liked the out-of-context Pokemon tweet that I tweeted, so it popped back up, and I was like, that's funny.
Nice. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good tweet. All right. Well, I can scroll back down the Twitch chat. There's a lot more from Brubber Frat about Mecole Hardman. Can I try to make this as simple as possible? So here's, I went and I literally, because it was during the break and I didn't want to start the segment like this with Matt. Thanks again to Matt Connor for joining us. But I made this point in the Twitch chat. All right. I went into the Twitch chat to make this point. This is how desperate I am at this point for understanding on Mecole Hardman. Here's the thing. I like Mecole Hardman.
Mm-hmm.
If you listened to the show last year, which not everybody did, new people find the show. Glad you're here.
You were a big Mecole Hardman stan.
There are stories you can find on SI of me going, you know who I like as a sleeper? Mecole Hardman.
Go listen to Times Ours.
Probably a lot of Mecole Hardman talk, I have to imagine.
There was. You were a Mecole Hardman stan.
I really like Mecole Hardman's skill set, and I really believed that last year he was going to end up with this larger role in the offense. The question, though, about but how often was he asked to do more than he failed to do it? Here's the thing. One is I do not have infinite stats information at this point.
That's Curtis.
That is Curtis, and he's not here right now.
Yeah.
Two things.
Army Hammer, sure. Curtis!
He might be here. Two things. One is that there were plenty of instances when they were asking him to do more, and then ultimately those snaps ended up going to Byron Pringle, who's fine, but clearly, for a variety of reasons, the Chiefs would rather have Mecole Hardman be the guy on the field having success in those spots. Mecole Hardman played the exact same percentage of regular season snaps in 2019 as he did in 2020. He wasn't asked to fill the Sammy Watkins role, even with ample opportunity to do so. You don't even have to care what I think about Mecole Hardman. But I think you can look at what the Chiefs thought of Mecole Hardman last year, which was exactly the same thing they thought of him the year before, which is that if you can create situations in which he's getting the ball in open space, he'll do some great things with it. And I would like to make this clear. I think there is absolutely value to that. I don't even mind him being the team's third receiver. If honestly, if he ended up just taking that speed to any particular role in the offense, it could be as a field stretcher on the edge. It could be with his feet. If he ended up being the Chiefs' slot receiver when they're trying to throw something a little different at you instead of putting Travis Kelce out there, there is real value to that. Mm-hmm. But I think at this point, it would be irresponsible to assume that he's going to be their true number two receiver next year. Because I also know that the Chiefs weren't planning on that because they were trying to sign Juju Smith-Schuster. They're trying to sign Corey Davis. They're trying to sign, I believe they at least kicked the tires on T.Y. Hilton. And there's a number of those guys that I don't think we've gotten all the information on. They were interested in other receivers this offseason. There's a role for Mecole Hardman, but me turning me in one off in the span of one calendar year, going from a Mecole Hardman apologist to a Mecole Hardman hater is not because I have gone from being an apologist to being a hater. It's because I was expecting a certain growth from him last year, and I think he's pretty much still this same player. That's in it, which is, again, it's okay.
It's a fine player.
It's me telling you that I think Mike Dana is a fine rotational piece. It might be how I feel about Derek Nnadi on some level. It's how I feel about Nick Allegretti. It's how I feel about Rashad Fenton. Guys, whenever I say, hey, I think this player is worth X, Y, or Z in this role, but I think that he'll be exposed on some level if forced into a larger role, that's just how the sport works. That's not some grand indictment of me saying that dude's not a professional football player. And if Mecole Hardman ends up being a huge, explosive player in 2021, I'll be thrilled. I'll go, because you know what I'll do? This is how I can always win. I'll go back to everything I said last year and go, oh, you know what? That was all in there. It just took a year longer for that to come out than I expected it to, than I think it probably should have. But you know what? Maybe as a late bloomer, that speed still works, and I'll be right again.
That's when you pull out the, hey, it was a COVID offseason. Yeah. It was weird. It was a weird year. Nobody was able to like fully get a full offseason. Now with the full offseason underneath his belt.
Hey, it's not my fault the Chiefs didn't even use him any differently last year. You know, maybe if they would have used him like I told them to last the offseason before, maybe he would have been a Pro Bowler last year too. I've got my bases covered on Mecole Hardman. But I'm also...
Jodie Foster.
That's right.
Good actress.
See, Beers doesn't get it because he's never listened to an episode of your podcast.
That's true. And I don't know if that joke's ever made it over to these airwaves.
Probably not.
Don't worry about it, Beards.
I've listened to some of them.
Name three of our albums.
Name one B-side track. I had that backwards. B-side track.
J.B. Briscoe.
Nothing.
B-side.
Nothing. B-side. All nothing. This is all nothing. You guys have made me B-side myself. What happened with your mic just there, Beards?
I turned it off quickly because I was going to laugh into it.
God forbid you laugh on the radio. God forbid anyone has to hear you guys laugh at my jokes. See, I'm trying to keep the illusion that
you're not funny.
It is. Well, I mean, there's no illusion.
Hold on. Beard just admitted it was an illusion. Beard thinks I'm funny.
That's the illusion.
It was all a trick.
Dame Moore's son had a two-run homer.
What was that noise?
Is you throwing the microphone and the microphone stand making a noise? That noise?
No.
JT asked why do you hate Mike Dana now?
I don't hate Mike Dana. I would have not been happy if they would have traded up in the second round to get him like they did for Breland Speaks for a fifth round talent, but you know, it worked out. I like Mike Dana.
But be honest, you'd have been much more happier if he was drafted in the first round than CEH, right?
It would have been funnier for me. Because it would have been like, wow, what are they doing there? And also, I don't have to get tased. In my personal rankings, Clyde is the worst first-round draft pick in Chiefs history. But it's just because no other Chiefs draft pick has put me on the other end of a taser.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
You know what? I'm not going to even say that sentence because I don't want that liner to exist.
Coward!
I'm finally learning.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
One more Twitch comment here from Bro Bro Frat, which I have not gotten tired of saying out loud yet. I'm going to do a deep dive on Josh's hot takes, see what players he actually likes. Patrick Mahomes, Dwayne Bowe, Travis Kelce,
mm-hmm.
Will Shields.
You were a big
Jamal
Marcus
Charles,
Peters fan.
Marcus Peters.
Yeah.
That's
I mean,
it.
You have it. You have a shoe that he wore.
That's true. I think it was a shoe that he signed.
Yeah, wore, signed.
I thought it was a game worn.
I think it was game worn.
Yeah, you're the one that bought it. You got to know.
Yeah,
this.
I'm pretty sure I was told it was game worn.
It is such a big shoe.
He might have big feet.
You know,
I don't know.
You know what they say about big feet?
Good corner.
You need big shoes to fill them.
Not wearing socks.
No. Why would you? Why would you wear socks when you got feet that big?
It's also pristine. It is a pristinely clean cleat.
I don't know. Here's the thing, man.
That's because he didn't tackle.
I mean, that. Yeah. So, I mean, if you're not wearing socks and you're not tackling, you're not going to get your shoes dirty. It's just science, Josh.
I'm going to need your help on this quote, Rudy. This is from Kellen Olsen, who covers the Suns. Devin Booker on the offensive fouls he got called for tonight. Quote, just no respect.
That's a Kentucky legend.
Legend?
Legend.
Legend.
He was the bench guy.
Beards. He was on the 38-1 team.
Listen,
but did they win?
Beards.
But did they win?
He was on the 40-0 team that didn't go 40-0.
Listen,
yeah,
legend.
Rudy, in fairness to Beards, he does root for a team that's worse than the Knicks. So
it's true.
It's a tough turn for him. I get it.
It's true. I can't disagree with that. It's the disrespect.
The disrespect, honestly. The disrespect.
I mean, Beards, do you even watch basketball?
Somehow Devin Booker still gets treated like he's freaking.
Hey, Beards, the year's 2021. Stop nobody. Watching basketball from 1930. Okay.
Yeah, we dribble with our left hand now, Beards.
Yeah, I hate to tell you, basketball wasn't around 1930.
We dribble with our left hand now.
Did you just say basketball wasn't around in 1930?
I don't think the NBA was.
I mean, basketball was definitely around in 1930. I don't know about the NBA necessarily.
I think we've
basketball
covered
was definitely
Fog Allen
around.
Was coaching KU football in like 1902. And
yes.
What I meant was the NBA.
So there was professional basketball.
There was professional basketball,
Beards.
Right?
Not the NBA.
But there was professional basketball.
But it's not the NBA.
When Oscar Robertson was dunking on 5'9" white guys.
I currently can't Google. My computer hasn't completely ended itself yet. The ABA, the ABA is not helping here.
Basketball was first played December 21st, 1891.
And even then, the Celtics were terrible. Cheaters. All of them. Baseball next.
You are listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.